is Jonathan Fogel, and you are listening to Mac Edition Radio.
This is Harris Fogel at the Storage Visions Conference in Las Vegas. I'm with Alex Grossman of Active Storage, and I'm with John Mulhern of Mac Edition Radio, but also of the University of Pennsylvania. There's been a lot of changes in the storage market, especially with the idea of the cloud, the oxymoron of servers that are underground being called the cloud, but also the way that we use servers, the way that we use distributed data and the topologies, whether it's a home network or whether it's the most extraordinary enterprise level network. And you come from a background at Apple developing the XSAN. So let's start by talking about where that led you and how it got you here today.
Great. I appreciate it. I'll tell you, it was really interesting. My experience with Apple was absolutely fantastic. What a great company. I mean, Apple really gets it. They are one of the best companies on the planet. And my background before Apple, I'd come out of enterprise storage. I'd come out of enterprise computing. And I also came out of the consumer side. And even from the side of, I was one of the first people in Los Angeles to sell cell phones and to build a cell phone store. So it was kind of an interesting consumer mix and looking at Apple as a consumer company that also had an enterprise bent. But going into Apple, it was interesting because here was a company that was a multi-billion dollar company that never had what we would call a storage practice. They really used third parties for storage. And in fact, the largest vendor of storage in the Apple market before I went to Apple was my previous company, Micronet Technology. We had about a 35% market share in the Apple market. And so when it came time to really build storage, the question was, what kind of storage do we build? Who do we build it for? And the need was really around the media, the really growth in media and media creation. Final Cut Pro had just come online. It was a brand new product. We were looking at it. We said, how do we support Final Cut? How do we support media? What do we do about universities that really need a true, what we call a purpose-built server? How do we make that work? What do we do? Do we rack optimize it? And we really went out and we asked customers. And myself and my product manager at the time went out and we visited about 120 customers. And we did it over 8 months. And we asked them, what are they looking for? And it came back that they were really looking for Apple to step up and take that same quality that Apple had built in all their products and that same care and attention and put it into a server and put it into storage. I thought, that's great. We can build the coolest looking thing on the planet. And we actually did. We built the XServe. We built the XServe RAID. And Apple spent many years trying to put a footprint in the enterprise space with that product when really they were extremely successful in putting it into the Apple market, people who used it. It was in every creative department on the planet. It was basically the backbone with the XServe, the XServe RAID, and XSAN for media production, also audio production. It was just fantastic. But, you know, like everything else, Apple burns out on things. And when you look at it and you say, what's the opportunity, the loss of, we're going into the phone business, we're looking at more mobile, you know, can other companies do what Apple does in that space? And the way I look at it, it was an incredible opportunity for myself and my team because Apple said, we're going to get out of it because there's others to do it. And it just so happens that when we started Active, we had that opportunity to take it to the next step, to say, here's the things we could do at Apple that were great, but here's the things Apple said you can't do. Here's the stayaways. And so when we came out with our first product, the Active RAID, we had to make that same decision. Are we going to build storage for the consumers and the prosumers, or are we going to build it for the media market and the professionals? And it just so happens that the people who spoke the loudest, and again, we did that same thing we did at Apple. We went around for close to a year and we said, what do you want? And the professionals spoke the loudest and said, you know what, we're looking for that next generation of what Apple built. And so we built the Active RAID. And, you know, knock on wood here, it's been a fantastic run, and we've done very well with it. And, of course, like everything else, the XServe RAID went away. Apple had other products, but not necessarily to the quality of what the XServe RAID was, in my opinion. And then the server went away. And people said, well, what are you going to do about that? And so we looked at that again and asked people, where do you really need it? And the XSAN market was really where they need it. So we built the Active SAN. We put that SAN product in place. And all along, we found that Apple did a really good job with the Mini, made the Mini better, made it a good little server for little work groups. But, you know, it's really incredible. I was just talking to some of my biggest customers today who happen to be at the Storage Visions Conference, and one of them is a sports network, the gentleman who was here keynote at that, one of the largest sport networks in the world, and they have hundreds and hundreds of Macs running Final Cut Pro. Now, that's not prosumer. That's not SMB. That's real enterprise. And so when you watch, you watch the NBA Finals, it's been edited on a Mac. You watch, one of the other customers is a large sports and motorsports network. When you watch most of motorsports, it's being edited on a Mac. Hundreds and hundreds of Macs. So we took over the infrastructure for that, and we're talking about petabytes and petabytes of data that we manage through both our servers and storage today. So it's really kind of exciting. But there's the other side of that. The other side of that is, is Apple getting out of that business? Are they completely going mobile? Well, in some ways, the answer is yes, and they're using those tools too. So, more of those people, this is the interesting thing. I find this really kind of funny, is that when we first started, no one was carrying a PowerBook. No one was carrying an Apple. Everybody was carrying a PC. Now you go to any of those creative places, you go anywhere in Hollywood, and everybody's got a MacBook Pro or they've got an Air. And everybody has an iPad. So our company, we built iPad applications. We built management tools on the iPhone. We did that because that's really where it converges from enterprise or what we'll call media creation into that consumer and prosumer, because everybody knows how to use one of those. So it's really exciting.
Up until this point, is it almost exclusively software?
Well, that's an interesting thing. Just like with Apple, you had to build great software, but you had to put it on good hardware. And honestly, there wasn't any good hardware when we started. That was the thing that I got out of Apple, is that we looked at some of the hardware that was out there, and we said, man, this stuff's really bad. And when we left Apple and we decided to start Active, we looked again and we said, this stuff's really, really, really bad. So we built our own. So even though we're a software company with most of our engineers being software engineers, we had to build our own hardware. And I'm not going to say we didn't take some artistic notes from Apple. We did. Our quality is good. And we kind of look the same in a little ways. And, people look at it and they go, that looks familiar. But realistically, we still have to build that hardware to house that software. Now, we're hoping in the future that our software portfolio can grow because we can do more with that. But we've been enhancing all of our hardware with the management tools and the software in a way that Apple did. So to me, when Mac OS X first came out, it was a big change for Mac OS 9. For me in particular, it was a real change. But what I realized was that it was kind of an extensible platform, and it was built on standards, and it was built on Unix. And so what we did, unfortunately, I did go to Apple, and I'll admit this, I asked them, can I license Mac OS 10 to run on my RAID controllers? And they said no. So we went to Linux, and we built everything, all our tools on Linux, but we're still the only ones who have a native Mac OS 10 management suite. And all of our tools that we build are all Mac OS X native. So we're not on the web. We're not using web tools because they're just lightweight and kind of crappy. So we build everything on Mac OS X, and it's been fantastic.
Because those X-Serves and X-Raids were built to such tough industrial standards, many of them are still in operation. And is there a migration path for someone that's got a working X-Serve and system?
Yeah, that's a great question because, I will tell you, they were built so much better than everything on the market. We used to look at what was out there, and we go, look at that bent metal. That thing looks like they put them in the rack and they bend and they do this and they're just horrible. And we built the X-Serves. I mean, they were industrial quality in the X-Serve RAIDs, and we were really proud of it. And we're still seeing some of the first X-Serve RAIDs that I remember putting out there in 2003. We're just starting to migrate them out. So what we did with Active Storage is we knew that a lot of our business was going to come from people who already had these great X-Serves and X-Serve RAIDs out there. So we specifically made the migration virtually seamless. So someone can take, and again, that familiarity to it, someone can look at an X-Serve and go, an Active SAN looks just like that. An X-Serve RAID compared to an Active RAID, they can look at it and go, I understand how those tools work. And the other thing we did to help the migration is rather than have them have to learn some web tool where you manage one, especially in our business where they might have a lot of these systems, manage one, and maybe these systems are in different countries or in different states, manage one. We can manage them all in one single platform. So it feels very much like the X-Serve and X-Serve RAID experience. And the other thing is we worked really hard to be one of the only companies that was 100% compatible with XSAN. So you just plug it in, and it just seamlessly works together. So more than a rip and replace, it became an in-place migration where as those aged, you could move over from, say, an XServe RAID seamlessly to an active RAID. And I would say that in the beginning of our company, that was 100% of our business. And now, of course, It's people going from our first active raids to second to third. So it's pretty exciting.
Thunderbolt changes things a little bit.
Thunderbolt does. Thunderbolt is interesting, and it's something that we have been involved with for a long time. I didn't mention this. I'll just mention really quickly. When we started the company, we were looking for people to fund us, and I had worked closely at Apple with Intel, and Intel loved our story, and they were our first Series A round VC investor. And, of course, they were the inventors of Thunderbolt, that technology, early on. And so we looked at that very closely. But Thunderbolt changes everything because it gives you a single high-performance PCI bus that goes outside the product, and it doesn't do what USB does and even FireWire, where it locks you into one single connectivity. It gives you multiple connectivity inside at the lowest levels of the product. The problem with it is that it's not ready for prime time in every case yet. So we think it's going to change in the future. It's really going to take something that it took a lot of PCIe slots to be able to do with one cable. So I would say stand by for what we're going to do with Thunderbolt. It's really exciting.
John, you have a question.
You talk about how creative professionals, or rather organizations that support creative professionals, have really latched onto your product. Can you give me some examples of other kinds of organizations that are also using your product?
Oh, sure. Well, of course, our product was really accepted by the Apple market, and we're strong, we're Apple strong. So creative meaning on the media creation side, and the audio side, of course, creative in the advertising side all the way along. Universities, a large number of universities. And one thing that I didn't realize, even when I was Apple at this grade, is that a number of organizations and what they call the mega churches, these religious organizations that have huge infrastructures, because let's face it, when they go on TV on Sunday, they go on TV on Sunday, and the DVDs and Blu-rays that they produce are just huge. They've really accepted it. And then a large number of small and medium businesses that were in love with the XServe RAID that could no longer get the components have switched to us. And part of the reason, I'd say 95% of the reason, is simply because they're so easy to use. I mean, our stuff just, it's self-optimizing. In fact, I used to say early on that we took it a step from where Apple could. I mean, if we were designing, we designed the XServe RAID, I think we started in 2001 and released it in 2003. It took a while. If I were to start in 2008, as we did, we could do a much better job, right? Because we knew what we knew, not what we didn't know, and that's exactly what we did. So today, taking an active RAID and putting it into an environment where you have an XServe RAID or an XServe, it just plugs in and goes, where some of the quote-unquote enterprise products or those third-party products, they just feel so foreign. You know, it's like giving someone a Windows XP box when they're used to Mac OS X. Just doesn't seem right. And I would say they're more like Windows XP than they are like Windows 7, which is closer to Mac OS X. So that's what we usually see.
Speaking of Microsoft, how do you play with the Microsoft universe?
Well, I think it's an interesting thing, a really interesting question. How do you play with Microsoft? Well, Apple plays a lot better with Microsoft than they ever have, obviously, since with iPhone, you know, you can use Exchange servers and Outlook and all these other tools, and we've come to see the same thing. Unfortunately, maybe it's not unfortunate, but some of the 3D tools and some of the new tools that we find that people are using in business, they are Microsoft-based. And in fact, even in our company, we have hundreds of Macs in our organization. We have two Windows boxes, and those are in accounting. So there's a Windows server. You know, actually, there's a couple, because there's a couple people on Windows and a Windows server. Now, are they running on MacBook Pros? Of course, boot camp, but realistically, there's no way, if you're in business, to get away from Windows. So we play with it really well. We've certified on that. We've actually certified on Linux as well, because a number of people that won't go that bridge all the way over to Windows will use Linux servers in their organization. So we've certified on that and play really well with it.
Are there any issues with different file formats and different operating systems in terms of file naming?
There used to be. Again, in the Windows XP era, that was a big thing. There were a couple things that really haunted people, and they still do, because, believe it or not, a lot of that Windows world is still on XP, which is amazing to me. But there are still limits in the size, so some things can't grow above two terabyte, which I guess if you're a Windows person, you may think that's big. I'll just give you a, for instance, one of our those major sports networks, they have over 8 petabytes of our storage. So their Windows stuff kind of doesn't play really well. For the most part, file formats move across really well now. Microsoft's done a pretty good job in the Office apps to make sure that their file formats are good. And, of course, QuickTime is the universal standard for everything that we do. So it hasn't been so bad. When most of our customers say, well, I've got all these Keynote files, and you know they ask us to export something to PowerPoint, we cringe a little bit. But other than that, it seems to work really well.
Do any of the creative application manufacturers, are they playing with your software, specifically looking for a certain hook to make things more seamless?
Yeah, that's another really great question. The answer is yes. So one thing that we did, in fact, we're introducing tomorrow something that we call the M Media Platform. It's something brand new for us, and it's really, when I say it's brand new for us, we've been working on it since we started, the day the company started, but it's, you know, one of those things that takes you 3.5 years to actually get done. And what Immedia does is it's a series of our products that have come so far from where we were based on a series of APIs, you know, advanced programming interfaces that people can use, and CLIs and tools where all the media companies can plug directly into us, and it's a single platform. Because one of the problems that's happened is there's been a question about Final Cut Pro and when Final Cut Pro 10 was actually going to get into the mainstream. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing, and I don't want anybody at Apple to get mad at me, but I call it a polarizing event. Final Cut Pro 10, the really high-end professionals say, I don't want to have it because it doesn't have all the little plugins, but yet the home or prosumers absolutely love it because it does just about everything. And it's been polarizing a little bit. So people have looked at Windows solutions and looked at Linux solutions and looked at these other solutions, and we found that we're starting to see more and more of that out there. So we have to be very, very open to the way we play with these things.
John, you're very active at the University of Pennsylvania in the educational space in terms of technology usage, and you actually have a huge footprint. How do you see the role of XSANs and that type of application software and networking in that environment?
We really did, at Penn, fairly heavily commit to Apple's various technologies in that area. What we've got right now, actually, I'll be honest, is a lot of confusion. People had the initial, you know, run for the hills reaction when Apple announced that they were getting out of these businesses. Some people have transitioned, I'll be frank, over to Windows-based solutions. Other people are hanging on by a thread. One of our big interests here is in these kinds of products from these third-party companies that get it, because we've got a lot of third-party companies out there that don't get it. And so we're very hopeful to have some solutions that will give people a relatively seamless transition, because, frankly, at this point, people don't want to be completely switching their approach to whatever technology it is, especially storage. So that's a question. I will observe on the Final Cut Pro versus Final Cut Pro 10 question that is incredibly polarizing. I always say a prosumer application is not a pro application. They're two different things. And there's some magnificent things in Final Cut Pro 10, but we have some of our organizations that are very heavy users of Final Cut Pro of the old version thinking of switching to completely different technologies.
There's actually an interesting point that you made there that I think is something really to hit on, is that the XSAN piece of it really changed the world. I mean, it was one of the things that I pushed very, very heavily at Apple, was the idea of collaborative workflows. So it wasn't only collaborative workflows in just the Final Cut space, but just in everything. The idea that you could, with a high-speed network and a low-cost high-speed network, be able to move, you know, at that time, even terabytes of data very quickly, and now we move petabytes of data very quickly. It was just unheard of at the price levels that Apple did it. I mean, oh my gosh, the cost was, I think we were a 50th of what the IBM solution was at that time, and you know, probably a 20th of what the lowest cost EMC solution, and we did it at 10 times the performance level. So the one thing Apple did right is they continued to put the XSAN client, and now it's free. And so that's $1,000 a seat that you save there. So we've been really working very closely with Lion and XSAN to be able to enhance the performance on that and give people back that level of performance. So even if they're using another tool, even other than Final Cut, that runs on Mac OS X, they can still take advantage of of Xsan. So it is very powerful. Where it's really lost is Xsan on, and I'll also say that the ActiveSAN product works in an Xsan environment where it becomes the metadata controller. So it becomes the server, and it's seamless. You literally take the configuration file. In fact, you use our tool, and you push a button, and it moves the configuration file over, and it just moves the metadata controller from here. You shut that one off. You turn ours on. You don't even notice it. It just gets a lot faster. And that is simply to eliminate the old X serves that, you know, they do last a long time, but eventually they're going to go away. And so for people who have that, in some ways, if they can use the new tools, it's actually less expensive for them than it was with Final Cut. But it is a lot of confusion. Just as you said, it's not only polarizing, it's people are going, oh my gosh, they're reacting in a very negative way because they're scared. And honestly, the communication from most of the vendors other than Apple have been, oh, Apple's out of the market, we're going to grab it and do it, and that's really concerned people, because when Windows vendors come in and say, well, that was no good anyway, just use this, and people say, well, I don't know, first of all, it's Windows, I'm not sure, and then they look at it, and, you know, the installation guide is 500 pages, where with, you know, our product, there is no installation guide. You go through the Mac Buddy-like application, 10 steps later, it's up and running. You know, there are certain vendors that get it and certain vendors that don't. So it's really been an eye-opener for people who understand it. And for people who don't understand it, they're just scared to death and they're running away.
Before we end, I wanted to ask the question of this difference between consumer, prosumer, professional, home network. Because a few years ago, the idea of a little home server was a dream. It's what Storage Visions preached. And now, of course, for $100, you can go out and buy a beautiful little NAS device with a terabyte drive, and sometimes could even get your favorite TV shows. So we're at that point of kind of seamless networking that people expect, actually. Where does that play into your plans for what you're doing, but also how you view that philosophically?
I'd say stand by from what we're doing there. But from a philosophy standpoint, it's very interesting. We used to always believe, or at least, you know, when I was in college, one of the things that we always, and so I'm schooled as an electrical engineer, so here I am as an electrical engineer in a storage, it's a crazy thing, and I don't do any engineering at all, and I probably don't even remember my color code anymore on resistors. Actually, I do, but the interesting thing about it is it's really changed quite a bit to the point where we always preach trickle down. You know, it was NASA building a pen that could write upside down, the trickle-down technology. They went to the moon, therefore we get that. That's exactly what's happened here, and Apple has broken that wide open, and a few others have really come in here. The technology, the idea of Wi-Fi, where, even when the airport base station came out, it was incredible because if you wanted a Wi-Fi base station, it was like $10,000, and its range was from here to, you know, the end of the table. It was crazy. And so here comes the airport base station, and all of a sudden you have that. Here comes USB. Here comes all these technologies, and I just see it getting more prevalent. It is going to be now this is when I sound old, right? The generation today doesn't know what it's like not to have a cell phone. They wouldn't know what it's like not to have YouTube. They just instantly think that content and what they do every day is available. They would not know what to do if they went into their house and didn't have a Wi-Fi, you know, wireless network and couldn't connect to the internet. So the technology is getting more prevalent. The scary part about it is we are becoming reliant on it. So, someone was just telling me the other day that they post 10 to 15 YouTube movies a day. They literally walk around with their iPhone, and they're just posting stuff onto YouTube, and that's how they're capturing their life. And they said, it'll always be there. And I said, well, it'll always be there until Google decides they don't want to host it anymore. Then it won't be there anymore. So with this, you still have to have best practices. So when you buy that NAS device for $100 and you have that terabyte hard drive on there, you still have to back it up. You still have to take care of it. So with that, this Peter Parker thing, right? With great power comes great responsibility. That's exactly what it is. So people put their lives, I mean, even, you know, Time Machine is great, but you got to use it and you got to connect it. People put their lives out there and you got to watch it. So a lot of what we're concentrating on is how do we help people seamlessly do that? How do we ensure that your content's going to be there? Because, you know, I don't have a picture anymore that I hold. I have a picture of my daughter on my iPhone, and I've lost it a few times, so the iPhone that is. So that's what we think about it.
We were just talking for a moment about the idea of portability versus security versus just this kind of invisibility of this extraordinary infrastructure that we take for granted until it fails.
Yeah, no, it's really true. I mean, I look at this and I look at YouTube and Facebook and everything that happens. I look at my own cell phone and I say, if I were to lose that, what would be worse, for someone to steal my car or for someone to steal my cell phone? Well, I don't have a cell phone anymore. I have a pocket computer called an iPhone. Everything in my life is on there, my schedule, my daily, everything. In fact, I automatically back that up on a daily basis, and I automatically download, when we're doing marketing materials or other things for the company, those proxies automatically go to my phone so that I can see them. My daily work of everything I do every day is there. But, you know, just like that, people's social lives are on Facebook. People's lives are on YouTube. That infrastructure we take for granted, and one of the problems is it's very costly. So we build that infrastructure. When people talk about the cloud, and they say, well, you're not really a cloud player. You build the infrastructure that goes in to areas. But realistically, the cloud's nothing but a big data center, not quite in the sky, as you said, it's in the ground. But that data center, it costs money to run it. And someday someone's going to say, we don't want to pay for that. Who owns that data? You own that data, right? How do you get that data back? It's not as easy as I'm going to go back the truck up and go pick up my bits. It's going to be a very interesting thing in the future. So we're going to see where all this goes. We'll be powering it. We'll be making it cheaper. But remember, the more data that goes out there, the more power, the more cooling, the more space, the amount of rack space that it's going to take, it's an interesting prospect. And I wish Apple was still in it doing it, not that I want to kill my own business, but I think that the innovation that we bring to it and the innovation that they would bring to it would be very interesting.
Alex, where can our listeners find out more about your storage devices and also your software?
Well, it's out on the cloud, Harris. It's actually at activestorage.com.
I want to thank Alex Grossman of ActiveStorage.com for spending time with us, and John Mulhern III of the University of Pennsylvania for spending time with us. It's been a pleasure, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks.
For Mac Edition Radio, this is Harris Fogel.
You've been listening to Mac Edition Radio. Available on the web at www.maceditionradio.com. The contents are copyright 2010 and may not be used without written permission.